97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, Team USA's fourth championship at the Women's World Cup. Our guest, Roxanne Kosh, who teaches sports media at the University of Florida. She earned her PhD at UNC. So, Roxanne, you were there for a lot of the games, and including both semifinals and the final. What's the take about Team USA from French fans, from European fans, from U.S. fans who you saw while you were there?
It's been an interesting cup. I think after France lost against the U.S. in the quarterfinals, I read a lot of articles in French media about how, and English media as well, about how French fans were going to root for England despite the rivalry they have with England. I didn't really see that happen, though. I felt like quite a bit of French fans were kind of rooting for the U.S. because, quite frankly, they were the better team this year, period.
Well, the French did side with the U.S. in the Revolutionary War, so maybe there was some of that still going on. What about this cup? I mean, estimates are 1 billion viewers worldwide. Has women's soccer arrived?
You know, we've been saying women's soccer has arrived for years. I think it is. It's certainly grown, and it is bigger than it's ever been. Has it arrived? I'm not sure, because the way I feel like if it's arrived, it almost implies that it won't grow anymore. And I think there's still potential for growth. So it is definitely, I think a lot of European nations, including France, 4 years ago during the Women's World Cup in Canada, these nations didn't really talk about the World Cup going on in Canada. The fact that it happened this time in Western Europe has really helped those nations kind of talk about women's soccer more. And the fact that the great majority of the 8 teams in the quarterfinals were European probably helped as well. So it's growing, and hopefully it continues to grow, and it hasn't completely arrived yet.
All right, so France is your home by birth. You have adopted the U.S. I assume you were pulling for the U.S. in that final match.
Yes, I was. I actually went to the final with some friends from Memphis, Tennessee, where I used to live, and so we were all grimed with U.S. Things, you know, like tattoos and body paint and stuff like that. It was kind of fun.
All right. So, any pushback from anybody that you heard about? Some of the things that have come up, or the sip of tea, in the game against England, and the twerking after any of that kind of stuff in European media?
So yes, in European media, I saw it, but really, and I tweeted about this at some point too. The cup of tea thing, it felt like it was completely built by the media, and by including online. When I say the media, I include social networks and, people online. Because everyone I've talked to about this, because I'm a big fan of soccer, always have been, always will be, and that cup of tea thing was a tease like you see a lot in soccer, men's soccer, and so I didn't really understand where it kind of like stemmed from, and everyone I've talked to, including English people, like no one felt insulted by it. No one, like everyone, kind of took it lightly. Like it was kind of a joke, and they had no problem with it. So I really feel like it's something that was completely built by the media, created by the media, including people on social networks. I think where I've heard a little bit more controversy here from France is the celebrations during the 13-0 victory over Thailand.
Yeah, because that was an absolute blowout, and there was some criticism about, you know, how giddy the U.S. players were getting when it was almost like playing a JV team.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, the exact same night in men's soccer, Germany beat, I want to say it was Estonia, but it might have been a different team, but they beat like a, you know, smaller soccer team 7-0. And, you know, they didn't celebrate past the second or third goal, because that's usually what happens in international soccer. When you play a smaller team, you might celebrate the first goal, maybe the second, but rarely the ones after that. You know, the day before the 13-0, France played Andorra in the qualifiers for the Euro 2020. And, you know, they won only 4-0, and they celebrated only the first goal. After that, like, I think it was the third goal that was scored by a player who had yet to score with the French national team. And he'd been waiting on his first goal for a long time, and he scored on a beautiful bicycle kick, and he still didn't celebrate. So I think that's, you know, what a lot of people here did not necessarily appreciate. But they also saw, I think, the 13-0 as something that should have happened rather than be celebrated, because the U.S. has so much more support than Thailand when it comes to women's soccer. So as you said, it's kind of like, you know, an NBA team playing a middle school team. No offense to Thailand.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the World Cup and the USA's fourth championship at the World Cup. We're talking with Roxanne Kasha, the University of Florida. A couple of other quick little controversy things, and then let's talk about the importance of this particular World Cup. The other two little controversies were dropping the flag, it looked like by mistake, during the celebration after the win against the Netherlands, and then the whole Rapinoe thing of kneeling and saying, I'm not going to the freaking White House, although she used a different word. Any of that showing up in European media?
Oh, yeah, it's all over the place. And, you know, a lot of people in Europe don't particularly like, or at least Western Europe don't particularly like the current administration in the U.S. So, yeah, there's a lot of Megan Rapinoe going on French and English media, and they tend to kind of applaud her for what she's doing. The flag, not so much. Like, the flag hasn't really shown up. I've seen it on American media a lot. I haven't seen it. I've seen it on social media. I haven't seen it on European media all that much. I saw the video myself, and yeah, the flag was definitely dropped. I'm not sure I see it being stomped though. So maybe that's why it wasn't picked up. I'm not sure.
Okay, so let's put whatever controversy there is aside and talk about the importance of this. Again, we mentioned 1 billion. Viewers worldwide. That has been one of the reasons given for why, let's take the U.S. women's national team compared to the U.S. men's national team, the disparity in pay. One of the reasons has been viewership or attendance. And that's not an argument that holds weight anymore.
Well, it does, in the sense that the Men's World Cup had more worldwide, still had more, a bigger audience. I don't have the number in my head right now, but it was definitely bigger than 1 billion overall for the whole tournament. I think, you know, the equal pay fight is very interesting, because it feels like a lot of the media, whether it's in the U.S. or in Europe, they almost cover it on the surface, but they don't really dive deep into the issues that exist around it. For instance, you know, the USWNT players receive salary and benefits from the federation, but the men don't. So it's kind of like, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of like when you are on when you receive salary and benefits versus when you're paid only commission. When you're paid only commission, you tend to make more money as long as you perform. When you get salary and benefits, your salary may be lower, but you don't have to worry about, you know, health insurance and stuff like that. So there's a lot of like details around this issue that aren't necessarily brought up by the main media outlets.
All right. So, but let's do, you know, compare, because that has been the comparison, the men's team versus the women's team here in the U.S. The women's team has been much more successful than the men. And why shouldn't they get, you know, with all these other things that you mentioned taken into account, I still don't think that the money is anywhere close what the women get versus what the men get. And if you base it on success, the women would be getting more.
That's true, but that's sadly the state of FIFA, not the state of the U.S. Soccer Federation. FIFA pays men's soccer, like for the men's World Cup compared to the women's World Cup, it's about, you know, they value the men's World Cup about 40 times more than the women's World Cup. And we saw it here this year in France with the women's World Cup being organized in small stadia. Even the drinks and food and everything was about half as expensive as it was in previous men's competitions. So it almost, the way I see it, it almost feels like FIFA is not trying to make money off of women's soccer, and that's a huge lost opportunity. And unfortunately, it hurts the players and it hurts the sport as a whole.
So if FIFA did try to make more money, FIFA could then give more money to the players. And I think the difference in the payout is FIFA's talking about going up to $60 million for the women, and the men were already getting $440 or something like that. It's an enormous difference.
It's an enormous difference. And it was quite funny because when they announced the prize money for this World Cup in 2019, FIFA was super proud to talk about how they were doubling it compared to 4 years ago, and it's like, well, that's great, but meanwhile, between the 2014 World Cup, men's World Cup, and the 2018 men's World Cup, the men's purse grew exponentially more. So, you know, they didn't make it any better for the women. The gap actually became bigger.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion about Team USA and the Women's World Cup. We're talking to Roxanne Kosh of the University of Florida. And Roxanne, I mentioned that you have adopted the U.S. and the U.S. Women's National Team. You also adopted UNC, having gotten your PhD here. Think of how rare it is for a player, and number one, how many UNC alums were part of the Women's National Team, and let's think about one in particular, Crystal Dunn, won a national championship at UNC. Last year, won the professional championship with her team at Raleigh, and now has won with Team USA the World Cup. Can it get any better than that for a women's soccer player?
Yeah, no, I don't think it can. I mean, well, I guess, yeah, with the Olympics. So they need to bring home the gold next year as well, especially since 2016 was the first time they didn't win it. So they got to get it back in 2020.
All right. So that's the only way that Crystal Dunn can be more highly decorated than she is right now is to add the Olympic gold medal to that hall.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
So talk about that legacy of UNC women's soccer and how it shows up on the international stage.
You know, when the U.S. played France in Paris, I tried to, well, I didn't try. I screamed tar, hoping that someone would say heel, and no one did. And I was highly disappointed. My friends, I was with French friends, and they were trying to shut me up. But, you know, I was going to do it to try to find fellow Tar Heels. I didn't that day, but in the final I did. And I was talking to this woman I'd never met before who saw my Tar Heel hat, and she was like, nice hat. And so we got to talking, and she informed me that UNC is the first college ever to have 23 alums who won the World Cup.
I saw that stat the other day.
Yeah, that's a full soccer team. Like, isn't that incredible?
So I believe it was 23 out of 84. 84 different U.S. women have participated in the World Cup, won the World Cup, and 23 of the 84, I think those are the right numbers, were Tar Heels.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you know, as far as what it means, you know, everyone in France, again, I was raised in France, everyone in France, when I decided to do my PhD at UNC, they were all like, how did you find this university? And I was like, well, it's the university where Michael Jordan and Mia Hamm went. So I applied, right? I mean, what sports bring to UNC, even in terms of international image and international exposure, is just incredible. And in women's soccer specifically, you know, like back, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I was applying for PhDs, women's soccer wasn't big in Western Europe, but I was already really into it. And so I knew about the UNC program, and I was like, oh, I want to go there just so that I can attend the home games. And during my 3 years at UNC, I didn't miss a single home game of women's soccer. It's an incredible legacy that, you know, Anson Dorrance has built there.
All right, let's go back to those earlier days when you had not yet applied to UNC. You were working for Eurosport. Compare the state of women's soccer internationally then to today.
That's an interesting question. I think back then it was really niche. It was really, you know, it was present in some countries, including Sweden, Norway, the U.S. China was big-ish then. Then they, you know, their all of their players retired and they hadn't prepared for the future. But everywhere in Western Europe, you just had Germany, basically. Like, England didn't really have that much of a program. France started a program, some people were fighting for it much before that, but the federation really bought into it after the 1998 World Cup win, men's World Cup win. And so it's pretty recent, right? Like, by the time France really started investing in women's soccer, the U.S. already had two stars. So it's a completely different landscape today. Spain has heavily invested in women's soccer over the past couple of years, and so as a result, Spain went farther than ever in the Women's World Cup. Same thing with Italy. So it's going to be really interesting over the next, maybe 4 years is not enough, but 8 years, I think in 8 years, the Women's World Cup in 2027 is going to be even more, like, definitely way more competitive, and it's going to be a really interesting landscape then.
All right, in the final 30 seconds that we have left, it's interesting that you said earlier it's the school where Michael Jordan and Mia Hamm went. And Dean Smith, the former basketball coach, famously said, we're not a basketball school, we're a women's soccer school. So in the final 20 seconds that we have, talk about what that means to you as a sports fan.
I think what it means to me is that it means that someone can be as big and respected as Dean Smith and still recognize that sports is not just men's basketball and men's football, and that there is much more to, you know, you can find better or really good athletes in a lot of different avenues. And so it just means a lot to anyone who doesn't necessarily fit the four major sports in the U.S.
That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Roxanne Koch, who we're talking to in France this morning. Thanks also to engineer Michael Coe, and as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.